This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. Homelessness is high on the agenda for elected officials in Central Florida. Orlando began its count of homeless people earlier this week. And meanwhile, in Seminole County, some folks want to make panhandlers apply for a permit to beg. They say some of those panhandlers aren't from Seminole County, they aren't homeless, and they're breaking traffic and safety rules. And in Daytona Beach, a homeless encampment is drawing criticism and concern. County and city officials trying to figure out how to help the residents of that encampment. Daytona Beach residents, what are you seeing when it comes to the homeless? And what about Port Orange, Deltona, DeLand? How are those cities dealing with the homeless situation? Is it a crisis? What kind of leadership is the county showing? We're going to talk about homelessness and panhandling later in the show, but first, another issue that's generating some controversy statewide, water. The governor signed a water bill yesterday. Proponents say it's a comprehensive reform of the state's water policy and it's a good thing, but opponents say it's a bad move and something that will weaken water protections in the state. Included in the chorus of opposition, environmental groups and former Florida Governor Bob Graham. Graham says the state's on the verge of tapping out its water supplies and more should have been done for conservation in this bill. Was it a mistake to sign the bill, 2 years in the making? Or is a water bill better than no bill at all? We're taking your calls, 1-866-338-5252. That's 1-866-338-5252. And joining me in the studio, Frank Torres, editor of the Orlando Political Observer. Welcome back, Frank.
Good morning.
Also, Maria Padilla, editor of the Orlando Latino blog. Welcome back, Maria.
Thank you, Matt.
And joining us from his office, Pat Rice, editor of the Daytona Beach News Journal. Welcome back to Intersection, Pat.
Thank you, Matt.
And you can join us. We're at 1-866-338-5252. Well, let's start with the legislative session. This week, a bill going before the governor about the state's water. He signed that bill yesterday. Proponents say it's going to revamp water management for the better, but opponents, environmental advocates, say it waters down protection and doesn't place enough emphasis on conservation. Here's former Florida Governor Bob Graham talking to WMFE this week.
We're at the edge of tapping out our underground water use without doing even more damage to our springs and rivers.
Well, Frank Torres, passing this bill was pretty high on the list of priorities for lawmakers, especially House Speaker Steve Crisafulli, his family businesses in agriculture. Any surprises then at the speed with which this kind of sailed through the legislature?
You know, not really. This is one of those things that got bogged down in last year's session due to the fight over Medicaid expansion. This is something that the legislators wanted to. This is something that the legislature has wanted to do with advocates on both sides advocating for water reform policy. And the voters even passed Amendment 1 in 2014, the constitutional amendment requiring the state to put aside budget dollars for water policy. Now, as far as how far the legislation itself goes to accomplish those things, you're always going to have, you know, a political tug of war at play. But at least the Scott administration can say they made some progress and actually did something this legislation to help the issue.
Frank, what are the next legislative steps, if there are any, for the opponents of the bill?
Well, the opponents of the bill will have to go against the will of the governor and the Republican majority in Tallahassee. So I guess their biggest play, and bringing in another former governor to speak out against this thing was politically wise, is just to make as much noise about it and tell the constituencies that they want more done. But, you know, anytime you go up against the governor with the Republican majority and the support he has in Tallahassee right now, you're going to face an uphill climb. So we'll have to see how it shakes out over the next couple of weeks.
We're going to go to the phones now. We've got some people calling in about this issue. Rich, you're on the air from Winter Springs. What are your thoughts about this bill and I guess the next steps, if there are some?
I'm very concerned about our state legislature and the federal government with regard to protecting our water supply.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on throughout this is a problem throughout our nation. And in general, I feel the Republican Party just puts their head in the ground with regard to science, really.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't realize how important this is to the future of our country, our citizens, and the people. And I agree with some of the comments that were just put forth here.
Okay.
Your comment.
Rich, thank you so much for your call. I do appreciate you making that call there. Frank, just coming back to you, I mean, obviously, when we're talking about the legislature here in Florida, we've got two houses which are both Republican, but they're not always on the same page when it comes to issues like water, other issues. So it's not just a case of, you know, a bipartisan or a partisan issue here.
Well, yeah, and keep in mind that issues like water and in other cases like gambling and Medicaid expansion are also used as gambling chips or bargaining chips to move other issues along.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always some other things going on in the background to help move both the legislature's agenda and the governor's agenda forward. But water policy or passing water policy has been virtually a universal desire from all sides involved. And, you know, they might not get everything they want this time around, but they can always try again next year.
Mm-hmm. Pat Rice from the Daytona Beach News Journal, your newspaper published an editorial not too long ago saying this bill, which just got signed off by the governor yesterday, may not be the best thing ever, but it's a good start and worth celebrating. I'm wondering, Pat Rice, how do you kind of square that with what some of the opponents are saying, that it really just doesn't go far enough? It's a bit of a leaky bill, so to speak.
Well, I think I don't disagree with the opponents that it's not a perfect bill,
mm-hmm.
and our editorial board wouldn't disagree with that. But you have to start somewhere, and some sort of water policy is better than really no water policy. And so I think these are the kinds of things that, you know, every session is an opportunity to retune, to mm-hmm. retool. Every time there's a new governor, it's an opportunity to do that, and that's really where we stand. Is that you can't just sit back and not do anything to have some sort of policy that moves the state forward.
Mm-hmm. Maria Padilla, we've seen conservationists, environmental advocates, of people who say this is not a great bill, coalescing around Bob Graham. He's kind of the voice of caution on this. He's quite outspoken about conservation, and he's speaking up for more protection. But really, you know, who's listening? Just how much weight does the likes of a Bob Graham carry?
Well, I think Bob Graham has a lot of weight, obviously, with conservationists. He created a conservation coalition a couple of years ago, and under it, they have various organizations, both environmental and non-environmental, under it, such as the League of Women Voters and the Sierra Club and the Audubon and so on and so forth. So he obviously has their ear, and he's obviously pushing a lot of environmental type issues. The other issue for which he's known is national security post his Senate career.
Right.
As to who is listening, I think as a former lawmaker and a former governor of Florida, he does command a lot of respect with other lawmakers. But I'm not sure, obviously, because the governor signed this bill, whether or not that carried enough weight with the current legislature. As for voters, once an issue seems quote-unquote settled, mm-hmm. I don't know that they want to go back to it. I don't know that they pay as much attention to it. For instance, when we had the constitutional amendments mm-hmm. for, you know, water and bills and a bunch of other things, I'm not sure that they pay as much attention afterward. And
right.
I think in a lot of voters' minds, it's sort of settled. And in a lot of voters' minds, because Florida grows by population growth, they may not even know who Bob Graham is.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Rice, let me just come back to you for a minute. In this bill that just got signed, there's tougher protection for Springs and Volusia County, Gemini and DeLeon Springs, rather. How big a deal is cleaning up those springs in the county?
Well, I think maintaining the proper water levels for those springs is critical here, including Blue Springs, which is a major stopping point for manatees in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really what the issue is for all of the springs. But Gemini Springs and De Leon Springs, those are, you know, critical tourism spots for this county, and they're also, you know, a place where a lot of fresh water pumps into the St. Johns River.
Mm-hmm.
Maintaining those water levels, including for the St. John's River, is really critical, and I don't think it's something that everybody should think is just a resolved issue, because Florida is going to continue to grow,
mm-hmm.
and demand for water is going to continue to grow, and it's not something that I think you solve with one bill, and I don't think this bill entirely solve things, but it did move it forward.
Mm-hmm. Just as far as, you know, what your readers are saying, Pat Rice, people in the county, is everybody pretty much on the same page about the need to protect the water and, you know, make sure that those springs are maintained?
You know, what I would say is that we have not gotten a lot of feedback from our readers in the form of letters and those sorts of things on this issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to stay with it.
It's hard for me to say, is everyone on the same page or not?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But clearly, it's something that people are thinking about. I want to stay with the legislative session for a moment and talk about another bill before we go to a break. This bill going before the governor, up for discussion rather. But it seems like it's possibly not going as far as that water bill. At least it's hit the wall in Tallahassee, so to speak. Guns on campus. Now, this is a controversial issue that Second Amendment advocates have been pushing for, and now it seems like it's really hit the wall. The Miami Herald quotes Senator Miguel Diaz de la Portilla saying he doesn't think it's a Second Amendment issue. He heads up the committee that hears bills relating to firearms. Frank, is this bill dead? Is it going any further?
You know, it's a serious roadblock, and this is the second or third time they've tried it. They tried it again last year, and it got bogged down during the political fights as well. But it's going to keep coming back. I believe there's some people know how powerful the NRA is, but their lobby is one of the most powerful in Tallahassee. It looks like it might not, strictly for time purposes, might not get a chance at a revival this year, but it'll mm-hmm. keep coming back until either it passes or there's a political event which kills it permanently. There's a lot of opposition against it, including police chiefs from all the major universities and cities around those major universities. But, you know, it goes down to a very passionate debate that's going down around the country right now, and that is, where do guns belong and what regulations need to be around possession of firearms. Mm-hmm. So it looks like it's hit a serious roadblock, but I don't think it's gone permanently. It's like it's that the zombie that keeps coming back session after session.
Mm-hmm. Pat Rice, what are your thoughts on this bill? I mean, you would have seen this kind of come up year in, year out, I suppose, in your time as editor. But what are readers saying about the idea of guns on campus, carry on campus?
Well, again, we haven't gotten a lot of feedback from our readers on this issue, but the feedback that we've gotten from people who are on college campuses is that they aren't anxious to see people carrying weaponry on the campuses.
Mm-hmm. Maria, do you think lawmakers are keeping one eye on November while they consider controversial issues, whether it's something concerning gun rights? I mean, the entire state Senate, for example, is up for re-election. That's thanks to redistricting.
I think that they are keeping the eyes on parents with a capital P, because parents send their children to school, universities, far and near, and they worry about what may or may not happen to them while they're away from home, how well they're getting along, and so on and so forth. And that would be one more thing to worry about. Remember that it was in 2014 that FSU had a shooter who shot three people. They suffered injuries, but there were no fatalities. And the police actually shot the shooter. Mm-hmm. And then who can forget Virginia Tech? We're talking about over 30 people, most of them students, who were killed by a lone shooter before he committed suicide, I believe. Mm-hmm. So parents don't need that, and parents do vote. The youth vote may be fickle. They may vote one year and they may not vote another. But parents will consistently vote, and I think they're very worried about that. If I'm only going to judge by the parents on my Facebook feed, they're very worried about this bill.
Some parents, though, they're gun owners. They may have concealed carry permits, and there's also the argument that you hear that, you know, gun-free zones don't work. If you're talking about a college or other places, it's not going to stop somebody who's got evil intent coming into that place and you know, doing some damage.
Correct. I mean, who can prevent any tragedy really from happening? Some tragedies can be prevented. What you can do is maybe try to build a few walls or gates and so forth and make it more difficult for something like that to occur. But you can't make it 100% preventable. But I don't think parents need to worry about that or want to worry about that. And they pay tuition and they pay taxes and they vote.
Mm. Something to keep an eye on for November, no doubt. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. Coming up next, we're going to talk about homelessness, drilling down to what's happening in Volusia County, also panhandling in Seminole County. Authorities are wrestling with both of these poverty and quality of life issues. Are you seeing panhandlers on intersections you drive by, and what's your reaction when you do? Some people think those folks should get panhandling permits. Is that a good idea? Is it too tough to enforce, or is it too draconian? And what about the homeless encampment in Daytona Beach? What are you seeing in Daytona Beach? Is that encampment just the tip of the iceberg? 1-866-338-5252. We're going to be taking your calls on these issues when Intersection returns in a minute.
Support for 90.7 News comes from Florida Hospital, presenting a new 12-story women's hospital filled with experts in preventative health, personalized maternity services, and the highest level of specialty care, all in one place. Florida Hospital for Women, because women are one of the reasons life is amazing.
Good morning. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Nicole Creston. You can take us with you anywhere you go throughout the day by downloading the WMFE mobile app. It's free for Apple and Android devices. Just search WMFE in the App Store or Google Play Store.
Support for 90.7 News comes from Orlando Sentinel. The calendar section inside Friday's Orlando Sentinel contains movie and dining reviews, plus local event information for planning weekend activities throughout Central Florida. Information about home delivery of Orlando Sentinel is available at orlandosentinel.com/subscribe.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. With me in the studio, Maria Padilla from Orlando Latino Blog, Frank Torres with the Orlando Political Observer, and on the phone, Pat Rice with the Daytona Beach News Journal. And you can join us. We're taking your calls at 1-866-338-5252. On Daytona Beach's North Beach Street, about 100 people, actually a little less than that, have set up an impromptu encampment. They're sleeping out on cots on the street. Now there's a couple of porta-potties supplied by local business and the city. Business owners say they're tired of cleaning up the storefronts and also the abundance of transients is affecting their business. The city and the county are working on plans for a short-term shelter. There's also a long-term plan for what's called a Safe Harbour Project. It's a one-stop shop with services for the homeless. It's supposed to be a collaboration between city and county authorities. Elected leaders talked about the homeless issue this week, but how close are they to a fix? Who's going to pay for it? We're at 1-866-338-5252. Who needs to step up and take responsibility here? 1-866-338-5252. Pat Rice, just how bad is this problem and why is it kind of bubbling up to the surface now? Why are people paying attention to it now?
Sure. Well, and this may take a little bit of time to fully explain, but Daytona Beach has always had a homelessness issue. Volusia County in general has a fairly sizable homeless population, but Daytona Beach, and especially downtown Daytona Beach, because so many services that help the homeless are located in or near Daytona Beach's downtown.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened over the last few weeks is that the city has taken some steps, which they felt were necessary, including closing a nearby park called Manatee Island Park,
right,
which was a place where a lot of homeless went during the daytime and actually camped out at night.
Now, when you say they closed it, is it what, being patrolled by police now? How are they enforcing that closure?
No, it's gated. Mm-hmm. It's a gate has been put up so that it's an island, so
right,
there's a bridge to it,
right?
And there's now a gate over that island so that nobody can enter it, meaning nobody from the public.
Mm-hmm.
And that move, along with closing another bathroom downtown and the removal of some benches, led to a lot of the homeless and how they ended up all in front of a county building downtown, a county services building, I think is a little bit of an open question. There are a lot of questions that some activists have sort of led them there.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is that now there is a sizable homeless population on the sidewalk in front of the county services building, and it's caused a lot of issues. First, you know, it's just a visual issue that is unsightly, seeing people sleeping on the sidewalk mm-hmm. out in front of a county building. For nearby businesses, they've had to deal with some real problems, including people going to the bathroom on their doorsteps and having to clean those sorts of things up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's led to a lot of tension between the city of Daytona Beach and the county. And that tension, as an observer, I would say that tension has not caused them to work more collaboratively to solve the problem. They've really been butting heads.
Mm-hmm.
They've been butting heads over what would be a short-term solution, and they've been butting heads over the so-called Safe Harbor Project, which is an idea of a sort of a homeless processing center that would be set up outside of Daytona Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And that continued as of yesterday when the county ordered the city to open up Manatee Island.
Right.
And the city saying, basically, you're not going to shove us around. You're not going to tell us what to do on this.
Mm-hmm. So are they opening the island or not?
The island was open for a moment, for a few minutes yesterday so that county officials could go out and look at the bathroom to
right.
see if it was functional.
Right.
I was out there actually during that time. I heard about it, went and the gate was open and walked out on the island. It's generally a deserted park is mm-hmm. what it is now. And that it was my understanding that it was then locked up last night at nightfall.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a really hot button issue here. We held a town hall, a first ever town hall last week on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
I expected maybe 100 people would show up. More than 500 citizens showed up to that town hall to speak about this, to hear a panel discuss it. And that tells me that, you know, it's definitely an issue that the community wants to see resolved.
Mm-hmm. I want to bring another voice in on the conversation here. We have Father Phil on the line. Father Phil is with the Faith Organization, F-A-I-T-H. That's a group of faith groups, churches in the Daytona Beach, Volusia County area. Father Phil, you're on the air. What are you seeing about this problem? What are your thoughts about some possible solutions?
Well, I do believe that Volusia Safe Harbor out, that is our ultimate plan. It's a homeless assistance center, and our goal is to get that built, which the county has offered the land and to build the building. And it would be able to change lives and help people get off the streets and give them a life.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now the city is working very hard to do an emergency plan and provide some shelter beds at the Salvation Army for those who are presently on Beach Street.
Mm-hmm.
They began last week with some assessments through our local service providers to see what people's needs really are and to try to get them situated in the, you know, their needs met.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the city is responding as well as it could. However, at the same time, this past Wednesday, we had our city commission meeting, and in my opinion, they're not moving fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the fight between, is this a county problem or is it a city problem? Certainly it is a national problem. It is a state of Florida problem. It is a county problem, and it is our city's problem. I think that all our local cities, there are 16 of them, I believe, need to participate and help solve the problem and make a commitment to give to Volusia Safe Harbor, which is a homeless assistance center, so that we can get this project started.
Mm-hmm. Maria Padilla, we've talked about homelessness on this show before, and as Father Phil just pointed out there, it's not just confined to one area. It's not just Volusia County, not just Daytona Beach. Orange County, other Central Florida cities are dealing with it too. The mayor of Orlando, the mayor of Orange County, they've kind of
Correct.
Got together on this. Do you get the sense that maybe some places are a little further ahead on the game on this?
Yes. If you look into the subject a little bit, you'll find that some states like Utah are being lauded for how they are treating their homeless problem or issue. And one of the things they're doing, and some of the solutions are really practical.
Right.
What that business owner did in putting out a porta potty, going around the whole government or municipal infrastructure was really very practical. He had a problem on his doorstep and he put a porta potty out there, and all of a sudden he doesn't have that problem, or at least not to the same degree.
Mm-hmm.
And then the government followed suit.
Mm-hmm.
They did the same thing. And I think that one of the issues that the successful programs do is it's a sort of triage when you're dealing with homeless issues. One is there is chronic homelessness.
Right.
So people have to have homes, have to have a permanent place, a permanent harbor. There's chronic unemployment. Folks who have fallen in and out of the official job market and have no way or permanent or stable way of earning income.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have chronic perhaps diseases, some of them being mental, some being physical, which all together are causing folks to just sort of fall by the wayside. And when you have disagreement between governments, as you do in Volusia, that's not helping the problem. Mm-hmm. And so the homeless simply, in a way, they become ignored because their folks are too much involved in the bickering end of it.
Mm-hmm. Frank Torres, obviously, you know, it's kind of beyond, as we said, beyond just one municipality, one county. Is this on the radar of state lawmakers?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe there's legislation right now that was proposed by Winter Park State Representative Mike Miller that would diversify the way homelessness commissions and task force are able to spend their money. And the co-sponsors on that bill are State Representative Jason Broder from Sanford and Mike LaRosa from the Kissimmee area. Mm-hmm. So you have sort of a tri-county coalition that works very similar to the Central Florida coalition that that works together, coalition builds with private businesses, and sort of diversifies varies its mission from need to need. Like in Orlando, we have the chronically homeless. In Osceola, mm-hmm. we have families living in hotels on the brink of homeless. In Seminole County, it has more to do with children. So, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. Mm-hmm. One thing it does take tremendous teamwork on all levels to tackle what is one of the most challenging issues facing local government.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that's something that that the local entities in Volusia County are getting to grips with. I want to take another couple of calls here. We've got Ron calling from Daytona. Ron, your thoughts on what could be a solution here, possibly?
Well, I don't know if it's a solution. I just watch a lot of organizations around the United States as I travel that are doing things a little bit differently. For instance, I was just in Charleston, South Carolina, while they had the primaries over there. And for the week that I was there, I was noticing a lot of stuff on news about the homeless problem that they're addressing. And they're actually building these mini houses, very small houses for homeless folks. They own land. They put the houses on the land. And then other people come in. And I don't mean the church organizations that they come in, which they do an excellent job, you know, bringing down food and stuff. But it's way beyond just giving them a hot meal. You have to educate a lot of people, re-educate them back into the system, and give them a little bit of hope that there are jobs out there. A lot of folks don't even know how to do a resume because they haven't worked in so long. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have never worked. Mm-hmm. And you got to re-educate them into the system. And giving them a hot meal and basically paperwork on where to go get a place to sleep, another hot meal, that's not a way to solve the homeless problem. There's so many church communities out there that are doing the exact same thing over and over again. And I would just hope that a lot of these organizations would send people down there to help in other ways also. If you have somebody in your community that knows how to help them do a resume that maybe could use another worker, you know, and stuff like that. In Rochester, New York, at Asbury United Methodist Church, they have an outreach mission where they actually educate them in every way, including a clothing outreach, a bicycle outreach, a food outreach, where the college students even come in. And that's a good point, the mm-hmm. college students. Mm-hmm. They come in, they actually talk to them and get to know them and stuff. Maybe have a lot of good ideas and a good tips on mm-hmm. where to get a job. Mm-hmm. But the main thing about it is that when you feel so hopeless and people talk to you as if you're a dog, you know, hello, this is where you go get a sandwich. No, you talk to them like they're human because they are human. Mm-hmm. And basically some people feel, well, you know, maybe there still is hope. Mm-hmm. You got to weed the good out from the bad. I know that there's a lot of sick people. Yep. I know there's a lot of mental people with mental and physical problems. And those are the ones that you weed differently. You take care of them in a whole different way. There's a lot of people that are so comfortable being homeless and being in their atmosphere around their homeless folks that it's almost impossible, but mm-hmm. it's not impossible, but almost impossible to move them forward. Mm-hmm. I was in New Orleans and I see underneath the bridge at least 200 people living there.
Yeah, yeah. Ron, some great ideas there. As you say, there's other things beyond just being living on the street, some sort of practical ideas about how to get jobs, maybe where to house these folks. Thank you so much for your call. Do appreciate it. It isn't hopeless, but it does take a lot of collaboration. Thanks for calling in. Want to take another call real quick here. Actually, just go back to Father Phil. We were speaking to earlier. Father Phil, collaboration mentioned by the listener there, you know, the idea of getting folks resumes, getting them kind of the skills they need to get back on their feet. Is that something that would you would be seeing at you know, once this Safe Harbor project got up and running?
Yes, that's exactly what Volusia Safe Harbor is really all about. It's not about a permanent warehousing of human beings, but rather it's helping our brothers and sisters. And primarily we're looking to – there are many programs to help the homeless families in our community. So I want to make that pretty clear. In fact, we just approved a 250-bed facility for families. This is the single person who is out on the street, and we do Volusia Safe Harbor is really – all about the average stay we predict from Pinellas Safe Harbor is about 45 days. And we hope to, during that time period, give them the education, the skills, whatever's necessary. In fact, Halifax Hospital has agreed to do medical care on the site. So our hope is to reintegrate people back into society, give them a hand up that they may become contributing members to our community.
Father Phil, just stay on the line if you would there. I want to take another call real quick here. We've got Eileen calling from Ormond Beach. Eileen, what are your thoughts on this issue?
Hi, I actually have two questions.
Yep.
The first question is, who would pay for the cost of transportation for people experiencing homelessness to get to Safe Harbor? Mm-hmm. And the second question is, the gentleman just mentioned that there are 250 beds at Safe Harbor, and I heard that the recent homeless count on NPR was like 5,000, and I may be wrong on that, so it's just a number. Mm-hmm. What about, how do you help me understand, if there's only 250 beds, what happens with the rest of the people that are experiencing homelessness?
Mm-hmm. Eileen, thanks for your call. And maybe we'll just go back to Father Phil for a moment here. We seem to have lost Father Phil there, I'm afraid. But we've got him back. We've got him back. Yeah, Father Phil, you're on the air. Father Phil.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, go for it. So, questions from the from that listener there. You know, what happens to the other folks? There's 350 beds, I think the number she mentioned. You know, what about that and the cost of transportation too?
Okay, well, we're talking about. I missed the call. I was disconnected. But basically, Volusia Safe Harbor is 250 beds.
Right.
And the plan, that doesn't mean that that's only 200. That after so many days, some people are there a day, some people are there 3 days. Mm-hmm. It's constantly opening up for other people to come in and to get their needs met. And so transportation, Volusia bus system, Volusia County bus system, goes out to the property, I think, once an hour. And so people are able to get to and from the facility.
Mm-hmm. Father Phil, thank you very much for joining us this morning on our show. I do appreciate you calling in, sharing some thoughts there on the Safe Harbor Project. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Matt, this is Pat Rice. I wonder if I could just have a couple more comments.
Please,
on that issue.
Jump in.
And first, thanks to Father Phil for bringing in his perspective on this. He was a member of our panel last week and a very helpful member. The tragedy in Volusia County is the lack of collaboration and cooperation between not everyone involved, but specifically the government entities to come up with a true long-term or short-term solution. Mm-hmm. And that is the challenge here more than anything else. And it includes Safe Harbor. I don't think anybody listening should be left with the impression that Safe Harbor is a done deal in Volusia County. In fact, there are significant issues about operational funding that are a result of the same hang-ups of government entities not being able to get together and come to an agreement on things. So a lot of things contribute to homelessness, but the specific issues here right now are largely a result of a lack of cooperation and agreement between government entities and then other people who are connected to those entities. And that wasn't true in a solution that's toward families and children here that's recently been set forth that everybody seems to be in agreement on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the issue.
Pat Rice, in your impression, how far apart are these entities? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about collaboration being the way forward, but you know, you've got the city, not just Daytona Beach, other cities across Volusia County having to work together, then the county itself. How far apart are these elected officials?
Well, I think there are a number of municipalities in the county that are in agreement at some level that a solution, something like the current Volusia Safe Harbor idea, is something that can be funded and can become operational. But a number of cities are not on board, including Deltona, mm-hmm. the county's largest city, and Port Orange, which is one of the county's largest cities, and also, I believe, DeBary.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot that has to happen, and it really has to happen fairly quickly for Volusia Safe Harbor to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting everybody at the table and coming to some resolution. And frankly, when you watch it, some of it has to do, it seems, with ego and personality.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. When we come back from a break, we're going to talk about panhandling. Are you seeing panhandlers on your street corner? And do you agree with a group in Seminole County that believes they should be issued panhandling permits? 1-866-338-5252. Intersection returns in a minute.
Support for 90.7 News comes from Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, offering the chance to watch a live rocket launch on February 3rd at 8:49 a.m. A United Launch Alliance Atlas V rocket will launch a navigation satellite for the Global Positioning System on behalf of the U.S. Air Force. More information is at kennedyspacecenter.com.
This is Intersection. Good morning. I'm Nicole Creston. In your forecast, mostly cloudy skies today and warmer with afternoon highs in the lower 70s, but an 80% chance of thunderstorms will bring in cooler air for the evening, overnight lows dropping into the upper 40s. The weekend will see daytime temps in the 50s.
Support for 90.7 News comes from UCF Health, where College of Medicine physicians care for you. Primary and specialty patient care in your community from your medical school. Now in two locations, East Orlando facing University Boulevard, just blocks from UCF. Main campus and in Medical City on Tavistock Lakes Boulevard, ucfhealth.com.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. With me in the studio, Maria Padilla from Orlando Latino Blog, also joined by Frank Torres with the Orlando Political Observer, and on the phone, Pat Rice with the Daytona Beach News Journal. And you can join us. We're taking your calls 1-866-338-5252. Well, we're going to move on from homelessness to panhandling, and a story that's cropped up in Seminole County. A group there says there's a problem with panhandlers on street corners and at intersections. Let's hear from Annette Sims. She's the co-founder of Taking Back Seminole County. She says panhandlers violate traffic and safety rules, and as well, they violate people's trust.
These people that are here are panhandlers. They're not homeless, and they're not even needy. They've just chosen this way of life because it's profitable.
Well, that's Annette Sims from Taking Back Seminole County. Pat Rice, we talked about homelessness in Daytona Beach and Volusia County. Does panhandling kind of fit into that conversation? I wonder how it does.
Yes, I think it does. I think particularly in downtown Daytona Beach, there are a lot of people who panhandle. It's also true on some of our main intersections in the city. And it's also true if you go to any of the local grocery stores that you'll often be hit up by people who are asking for money. I think that a lot of these people are homeless, particularly mm-hmm. in downtown Daytona Beach, and probably there are some people who are out there who are panhandling just to make some money. But yeah, it's definitely an issue here, and it's one of the main things that you will hear about downtown as a reason why people don't come to our downtown.
Mm-hmm. Frank Torres, as a Seminole County native yourself, what are you seeing out there? What's going on?
You know, what I'm seeing is a group of the same group at busy intersections or overpasses like I-4 and Route 46, Lake Mary Boulevard, and Reinhart, walking between the lanes of traffic at stoplights. It's the same group. They seem very organized. They work certain hours, and they know when the drivers are going to be there. Now, there are theories that these people are making a profit anywhere between $300 and $600 a week, and these aren't truly needy people. They are panhandlers, as the advocate for that group said. And, you know, it's always been a complicated conversation, whether it's in Seminole County or Orange County, mm-hmm. over where these panhandlers should be allowed to do their activities and what is the solution. to solving them. Because if they're not homeless, if they're just panhandling and looking for funds, then the problem gets a little bit more complicated. You're not just dealing with homeless people. You're dealing with people who are trying to make a living off the change of drivers.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a call now. We've got Debbie calling from Grand Island, rather. What are your thoughts about panhandling, Debbie, and what are you seeing?
Hello. Well, what I was thinking listening to you, I've listened to the complaint that's been made wanting mm-hmm. them to be permitted. But, you know, if you're dealing with homeless people who are just trying, you know, to get some money, which I see over here where I live, mm-hmm. The thing that I would say is I wouldn't want to think that Seminole County and these communities are being where they just see this as a blight on their community, a reflection of their community, and they just don't want it there. If these are people who are panhandlers and this is the way they've decided to earn a living, and the community is concerned about safety and welfare, mm-hmm. you know, security, then why don't they set up a designated area, you know, intersection that people could do this? I really just, when I'm being approached by mm-hmm. someone, I just don't see them where it's someone who's doing this for the sake to earn a living.
Mm-hmm. You think they don't have a choice? They're kind of in that situation, whether they want to be or not?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I would, you know, I think it's sad, but I just would not want to think that this is a reflection of mean-spirited people who just see this, that they don't want it in their community because, you know, they see that it's a blight on their community. And I don't think that that should be allowed. I mean, if they are homeless people, getting back to what we were talking about earlier, is the community, you know, across the country, the president called for no veterans to be homeless.
Right.
And I know that there's different states where they are setting up these, what the one gentleman talked about, where it's the little small houses, mm-hmm. you know, and they're doing communities and where the different organizations, church or organizations that have come up, like we have, mm-hmm. Orlando, I believe it's the Daily Bread, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, where it's people who are providing food, mm-hmm. you know, that they can't come together. And, you know, these people really are looking for a hand up and a way out of their homelessness.
Right, right.
And I just think that there is a way to deal with this in a way that people can maintain their dignity and be treated, you know, and I think it's a reflection on Seminole County that it would even come to a thing where they're going to charge them for a permit. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous.
Okay, well, thank you for your call, Debbie, and you make some good points there about the need to keep people, you know, treat people with respect, the difficulty of, I guess, deciding whether people are trying to do this for profit, as some folks think they are, or whether they're there, whether they want to be or not. Maria Petty, I just want to ask you about that idea of having a designated area. I mean, that's been tried before. Has it worked?
I don't know. I don't know that you can just specify a particular area for where you can stand and beg for money, which is essentially what panhandlers are doing. Mm-hmm. I don't see that working. I think perhaps one of the things that may work is don't roll down your window.
Right.
Don't roll down your window and don't give money, because if it's a profit motive or not, I mean, anybody who's panhandling is in it for the money, mm-hmm. whether you are homeless or not. That's why you panhandle, because you want money. And so if you're standing on a corner and nobody's giving you money and nobody's rolling down the window, then maybe you're going to move on to another corner. That's a practical way of dealing with that. I don't know whether you can actually issue licenses for people to panhandle. I'm a Seminole County resident, and I'm not sure that that's going to work at all.
Mm-hmm. I want to take another call here. We've got Linda calling from Daytona. What are your thoughts about this issue, Linda? How does panhandling kind of fit into that whole big picture of homelessness and how to help folks who are down on their luck? Linda, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Listen to the ring. Okay.
I'm afraid we're going to have to drop that call, but I want to move on from panhandling to talk about something else that's happening in Daytona Beach, a more positive story perhaps, definitely a more positive story if you're into motor racing. Recently, the final seat was bolted into place in this Daytona Speedway project there, Daytona Rising project, hitting that major milestone. The last of 101,500 seats was installed. It's a $400 million project. It broke ground in 2013. It's not quite finished, but just about. Here's what Jim France, he's the chairman of the International Speedway Corporation, he told Fox Sports, he was talking to them earlier this week about the updates.
Something my father would have been very proud of. It's the kind of things that he dreamed about. Of the facilities that I've been to, I don't know that there's another one in the world that spent $400 million on the fan part of the venue.
Well, that's Jim France talking about the Daytona International Speedway, the Daytona Rising project there. Pat Rice, you've been following this story from its inception through to almost completion. How big a deal is this for Daytona Beach and kind of the renaissance of the Daytona Beach area?
It's been a very big deal for Daytona Beach. It's employed a lot of people both from here as well as from Central Florida. And the renovation is truly something to behold when you look at the track as it exists now versus as it existed 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's no longer what you would call sort of an old-fashioned large facility for racing. It's really a modern grandstand stadium for racing. And it's going to be, I think it's going to be really exciting for everyone to come and see that new track and see better food facilities, certainly better facilities for people to go to when it rains, more comfortable seats. And on top of all that, when you drive by the track on International Speedway Boulevard now, it looks really cool. Mm-hmm. It just looks really beautiful at night. And I hope everybody who can comes out and watches some racing starting next week with the Rolex 24-hour race.
Mm-hmm. Just a quick thought there, though. There are fewer seats, right? So just in general, how you know, is motor racing still in good heart in Daytona Beach?
Yeah, I think what they did was they knocked down the backstretch grandstand area and expanded a little bit the front stretch. And I think it's recognition of a few things, a lot of which is that just how people go and watch sporting events and how many people will go has changed somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think, you know, I've been here 6 years, and the back grandstand, at least during my time, has never filled up. But during the 500, the front definitely does. During the Coke Zero 400, the front of the track definitely fills up.
Mm-hmm.
And TV, I think, has come much more into play. But in terms of its health, think that racing is very healthy. When they sign contracts, long-term contracts on the TV side, those aren't for millions of dollars, they're for billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Well, from motor racing back to the legislature, and things are zipping through pretty quickly in the legislature, some bills there at least. Just in the last couple of minutes here, I want to talk quickly about a bill that's alarming some journalists at least. This bill, well, there's two bills, in fact, that have the backing of the League of Cities. Here's what the Tallahassee Democrat reported about these bills late last year. The bills filed Monday would amend a provision in the public records law requiring state and local governments that unlawfully refuse to provide public records to pay reasonable attorney's fees and costs to plaintiffs. Instead of saying the court shall pay such fees in such cases, the bills say courts may pay them. Pat Rice, we don't have too much time, but just real quickly, what's the concern with this bill, all these bills?
The concern, more than anything, is one word, and it's that in the past, if you sued a government agency and they were found that they illegally withheld records from the public, that the person who sues the attorney, they shall collect attorney's fees.
Mm-hmm.
The change is that it will now say they may collect, mm-hmm. meaning that it's at a judge's discretion. And what that does is put a real dampening effect on the ability of the average citizen or the average small businessman or
really anybody to be able to sue for those records, because really if you're hiring an attorney to do that, you're kind of now, if this passes, you're rolling the dice mm-hmm. as to whether you'll be able to get your attorney fees mm-hmm. for having to go through the trouble of getting your government to do what they should have done in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the driving issue here. And our hope certainly is that people will not pass this and not allow this major chip out of the state sunshine law.
Mm-hmm. Last few seconds here. Frank Torres, what are you hearing about this bill? What are the chances of this passing?
I would say with legislature that's just in such a hurry to just get this session over with and get reelected, it faces a fight.
Mm-hmm. Frank Torres is the editor of the Orlando Political Observer. Thank you so much for joining us, Frank.
Anytime.
We're also joined by Pat Rice. He's the editor of the Daytona Beach News Journal, calling in from his desk in Daytona Beach. Thank you, Pat.
You're welcome.
And Maria Padilla, editor of Orlando Latino Blog. Thank you so much for joining us, Maria.
Thank you for having me.
Support for Intersection comes from Florida Hospital and from our listeners. Producer is Brendan Byrne. The executive producer is Catherine Welch. Production assistants from Nicole Kristen and Alex Gasparini. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.